As we resume our Bible study tonight, turn to the book of Deuteronomy, or in Hebrew, Devarim. What does Devarim mean?
Words.
That's all it means, is words. Deuteronomy means second law. So the Hebrew is Devarim, words, from the Latin / Greek, Deuteronomy. The first thing I want you to know is a time perspective. Okay? The book of Genesis covered from creation for about 2,500 years, right? Roughly. Now, I know somebody's going to send me an email and say it was exactly so many years, but it was about 2,500. For me, that's close enough. The book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy cover 40 years. So Genesis, 2,500. The next four books, 40 years. And Deuteronomy covers a very short period of time. So let me do as I do with each of the books and start with an introduction to the book. First, for the Jewish sages, here's what they have to say about Deuteronomy, the portions that I thought were particularly relevant. It says the Talmud refers to Deuteronomy. You know what Talmud is, right? Talmud means that which is studied. It's the collection of the rabbinic sayings that they study in Jewish Bible schools called yeshivas. In most Bible schools, you don't study the Bible, you study commentaries. And that's what the Talmud is commentaries. So you're studying the opinions of the rabbis that came before you when you're in yeshiva. But the Talmud refers to Deuteronomy as Mishnah Torah, commonly translated as repetition or review of the Torah or explanation of the Torah. So what it does is it takes all the commandments in the first four books that are applicable to everybody and puts them in one book. It doesn't include how do you build the tabernacle, because you and I are not going to build a tabernacle. It doesn't tell us how to sacrifice a lamb, because you and I aren't going to sacrifice a lamb. It tells us the commandments that apply generally to each and every body. But they say the entire book was said by Moses to the nation during the last 5 weeks of his life. That's what's important to know about Deuteronomy. It takes place the last 5 weeks of his life. He knows he's about to die. He knows he can't go into the promised land with the people. He knows that while God was in their midst in the pillar of fire at night and the cloud during the daytime, feeding with manna and water from the rock each and every day of the wilderness wanderings, and doing miraculous things with them every single day, they still turned away from him. So what's going to happen when they go into the promised land? There's no manna every morning. There's no water coming out of the rock. Moses is not there to intercede for me after the Lord. Are they going to be upright before the Lord, or are they going to fall flat on their faces? That's what Deuteronomy is about. It is a scathing lecture. Think of your strictest papa out there, papa figure, telling you, you better not mess up, child. That's what Deuteronomy is, really. They say, in effect, it was the prophet's last will and testament to his beloved people, in which he warned them of potential pitfalls and inspired them to rise to their calling. Since Deuteronomy does not review all the commandments and narratives of the preceding 40 years, the question arises on what basis the commandments and narratives contained in the book were chosen. And that's where it comes down to. They would need strong faith and self-discipline to avoid the snares and temptations of the pagan neighbors and false prophets that were going to be among them. So to stress these laws and values and to exhort Israel to be strong, that was the function of this book. With its laws and Moses' appeal to the conscience of the people, Deuteronomy is not merely a review of the previous four books of the Torah, but it records the entire history of Israel in summary form to remind them of their shortcomings of the past and to exhort them not to make the same mistakes. It includes the commandments that are relevant for Israel's new life in the land. And then I like the way they ended. They said, but though Moses bid farewell in his book, he's not gone. His teachings are here, and his presence remain embodied in all his students for the thousands of years since he lived. What was it Messiah said? If they won't hear Moses, they wouldn't hear one who rose from the dead. Yeah. So Moses' intent was to lay out for us how a child of God lives in a way that pleases our Heavenly Father. Okay, let's go to my introduction. You've got the first five books called the Torah. That's the way they're divided in the Jewish Bibles. Torah, writings, and prophets. Genesis covers from creation to the sojourn in Egypt. Exodus covers the exodus from Egypt with the mixed multitude as they journey to Mount Sinai and receive the Torah given by God through his own lips and continuing to the completion of the tabernacle. That's Exodus. Leviticus describes the priesthood and its sacrifices and requirements for holiness and has the Moedim, the appointments of God, that teach about Messiah's first and second coming. So the entire book of Leviticus is about holiness and cleanliness and Messiah. Then the book of Numbers covers 38 years of the wilderness wanderings. And Deuteronomy covers 5 weeks. How would you classify Deuteronomy? As a sermon. A sermon. The Hebrew word, he said, is amar. A nice pa'al verb meaning simple action, just talking. Deuteronomy is not amar. It's not simple talking. It's the Hebrew verb, dibar. Dibar is spoke and its strong action is pounding the podium. I like to think of the old-fashioned Southern preachers that got up there on Sunday morning and screamed for 30 minutes. What they said, I usually couldn't figure out, but they said it really, really loudly. This is Moses banging on the podium saying, the final exam is coming. I'm giving you the answers. Pay attention. Moses exhorting the people to be obedient and holy. That's all Deuteronomy's about. Be obedient to the Lord and walk in holiness before him. Is there anything in the New Testament that exhorts us to be holy and to be obedient? Turn up to the book of Hebrews. Book of Hebrews. Without holiness, comma. Hebrews 12:14. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. Does that cause you to stop and go, I better make sure I'm holy before the Lord returns? That's what teshuva or repentance is all about. Teshuva means turn around. Stop running away from God. Stop running towards sin. Turn away from the sin and come back toward God. But now, is there anything in the New Testament that says we should be obedient to the commandments? Well, what does John 14:15 say? If you love me, comma, keep my commandments. Go to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2. Verses 3 and 4. 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Yep. People are just commenting about people being buried before nightfall. 1 John chapter 2, verse 3 and 4 says, "Now by this we know that we know him." Him who? God. "If we keep his commandments." He who says, "I know him," does not keep his commandments, is a liar and the truth is not in him. What's my point? Deuteronomy and the New Testament have the same purpose. To teach the children of God, those who've entered into a covenant by faith, how to be obedient and holy before a holy God. In the book of Leviticus, it says what? "Be ye holy, for I am holy." Look at 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. Verse 16. Well, let's start in 15. "But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in" what? "All your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy." I get frustrated reading Facebook comments sometimes, though I shouldn't. I saw one in particular today that was talking about the Greek word telestai. Do you remember telestai? It means it is finished. And one of the big comments was, when Jesus said it is finished, he meant the Old Testament was finished. And the commandments were now done away with and we're free to live any way we want to. Is that what the Bible teaches anywhere? The answer is no. So let's go back to Deuteronomy. We're still in the introduction to. The word Deuteronomy itself means second law. That's what it means. But does that mean that the laws in Deuteronomy are different from those that came before? The answer is no. It simply puts them into a nice, convenient location. And who are they in this nice, convenient location for? Turn to Deuteronomy itself, but go all the way back to chapter 31. Deuteronomy 31, beginning in verse 10. "And Moses commanded them, saying," you know what the word "saying" means, "at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time," the Moed, "in the year of release, at the Feast of Tabernacles," make a note of that, "at the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses, you shall read this law," that's the book of Deuteronomy, "before all Israel in their hearing, gather the people together, men and women, little ones, and the" what? "And the stranger," that's the non-Jew, that's the Gentile, "who is within your gates, that they may hear, that they may learn to fear the Lord your God, and carefully observe" what? "All the words of this law. And that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you crossed the Jordan to possess." So at the Feast of Tabernacles, the entire book of Deuteronomy was to be read, so that everyone could learn to observe the commandments of God, whether they'd been taught them or not, whether they were Jew or Gentile. Now keep a finger there. Well, no, let that go. Go to Zechariah chapter 14, verse 16. At which festival was the entire Torah to be read? Tabernacles. Zechariah 14, 16. Zechariah 14 has the entire 7-year tribulation period. It ends by verse 16. So between Zechariah 14:1 and Zechariah 14:15, 7-year tribulation period takes place. The Battle of Armageddon's over. Messiah's returned. Verse 16, we've come to the kingdom. "And it shall come to pass that everyone who's left of all the nations..." So who is that? Everybody. Jew and Gentile alike. "Which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, Lord of hosts, and keep" which feast? The Feast of Tabernacles. What's read at the Feast of Tabernacles? The entire book of Deuteronomy. so that whether you've heard the commandments of God or not, you can learn them and put them into practice. And that's in the Messianic Kingdom with Messiah on the throne. Yes, Melanie?
I've been studying this for years.
You've been studying this for years?
I haven't got it all. I can't imagine somebody once every 7 years is supposed to know it and remember it. And
yeah, that's why Acts chapter 15. Let's go to Acts chapter 15. For those who didn't hear, she says she's been studying this for years and doesn't know it all yet. So can't imagine hearing it read once every 7 years would be enough. But if you go to Acts chapter 15, verse 21. For Moses has had throughout many generations those who preach him in every city being read in the synagogues when? Every Shabbat. So yeah, so every Shabbat, you're going to get a portion of it. Week after week after week, year after year after year. And at the Feast of Tabernacles, you get it all. All summarized, all put in one nice little bucket. And then Shabbat, 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 Shabbat. So you come to another Tabernacles, and then here it is, read in its entirety. So you're right. Once every 7 years, not enough to hear it. We've studied the book of Deuteronomy in here before, but it's been years. Time to do it again. So back to the beginning, still in the introduction. The hearers that hear Moses as he speaks the book of Deuteronomy were not born yet when the Torah was given at Mount Sinai. What happened to all those who were 20 years old and above? They've all died in the wilderness. So these children that are now grown-ups were not there to hear the Lord's words in their own ears. So Moses is going to give a review and then repeat everything that God told us to do. So they can't say, well, how are we supposed to know? We weren't there. It's written down for us to learn from generation to generation. It summarizes the law, it summarizes the commandments, the statutes, and judgments that are applicable mostly to the common people. Yeah, not everything for the priests is in here, but we're not priests. Not everything for the Levites is in here, but we're not Levites. But it's what you and I need to know. It will stress that keeping the Sabbath is the key to the covenant. Keeping the Sabbath is the key to the covenant. Why is that? Go back to Exodus chapter 31. Exodus chapter 31. What is so special about the Sabbath? Why won't just any day of the week do? If you want to have fun with the traditional Protestant preacher, you say, why don't we keep the Sabbath? They say, well, we can keep any day of the week holy we want to. Okay, then let's keep Sabbath. No, any day but Sabbath. Okay, how about Monday? No, you can keep any day except it's got to be Sunday. Well, then it's not any day, is it? Okay, but Exodus 31 verse 12. And the Lord, see how the word Lord is spelled? That's the same Lord that Acts chapter 2 says is our Messiah Yeshua. Lord spoke to Moses saying, what does that word saying mean? It's a quote. What did Messiah say in Matthew 4:4? Said, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. How do we know if a word proceeds from the mouth of the Lord? And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, that means it came out of his own mouth. Speak also to the children of Israel, not to Israel, to the children of Israel. When the physical descendants of Jacob came out of Egypt, who came out with them? A great mixed multitude. Who's at Mount Sinai? They all are. To whom does God speak? To all of them. That's why it says, speak also to the children of Israel. How does Paul put it in Ephesians chapter 2? You have been grafted into the commonwealth of Israel. That's another way to describe the children of Israel. Saying, surely my Sabbath you shall keep. What does that word surely mean? means absolutely you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you. That word sign is the Hebrew word ot, O-T-H. It's translated in Genesis 4:15 as the mark. So you can read it as the sign or the mark. Just think of Revelation 13. Satan has a mark. God has a mark. What is God's mark? The Sabbath. For it's a sign between me and you throughout your generations that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath holy, therefore, for it's holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done. It should be translated, work may be done for 6 days. But the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on a Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. Does that make you think of the Inquisition, which for more than 1,000 years put to death anyone who kept the Sabbath? Just the opposite of what God said, isn't it? Just the opposite. Okay, back to Deuteronomy. Still in the overview. Who wrote Deuteronomy? Moses did. How do we know? Well, in our Bible it says the fifth book of Moses called Deuteronomy, but hey, well, that's something the publishers put there. But turn to the book of Mark, chapter 10. Mark chapter 10. Verses 1 through 9. Mark chapter 10, verses 1 to 9. Then he arose from there, who's the he? Yeshua. And came to the region of Judea by the other side of the Jordan. And multitudes gathered him again, and as his custom was, he taught them again. The Pharisees came and asked him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Testing him. Why do they ask that question? There were two schools of the Pharisees, a school of Hillel, school of Shammai. One of the two schools said, you can only divorce your wife for sexual immorality. The other said, you can divorce her for any reason at all. So they want to know, which of these two schools of thought does Messiah agree with? Ours or theirs? And he answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? What did who command you? What did Moses command you? They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. And Yeshua answered and said to them, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. Quote, and then he quotes from which book? Deuteronomy. From Deuteronomy chapter 24, specifically verses 1 through 4. Why do I mention that? We all know Moses wrote it well. The school of higher criticism in Christian theology says, oh no, Moses didn't write this. The Lord himself says Moses did. And they say, no, didn't happen. That's just fairy tales. Don't ask me what I think of the school of higher criticism, okay? But just to add to this, go to Acts chapter 3. Acts chapter 3, verse 22. Acts chapter 3, verse 22. This is Peter's sermon when he's filled with the Holy Spirit. In verse 22, Acts 3:22, he says, for Moses truly said to the fathers, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Where's he quoting from? Deuteronomy. Moses truly said to the fathers, then he quotes from Deuteronomy. Go to Acts chapter 7, verse 37. This is Stephen as he's on trial for blasphemy. He says, this is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Who's Stephen quoting from? Which book? Deuteronomy. Which he says was written by Moses, just like Yeshua did. Just like Peter did. Go to Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. What would the Bereans do? When they were taught something, they would go to the scriptures to see if it was true or not. The school of higher criticism says Moses didn't write Deuteronomy. So let's look. Romans chapter 10, verse 19. But I say, did Israel not know? Who's saying this? This is Paul. First, Moses says, then he quotes from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 32, in fact. Which book did Yeshua quote from more than any other? Deuteronomy. So I don't care what the school of higher criticism says, Moses wrote it. I said Yeshua quotes from Deuteronomy more than any other book. Let's just look at a few of the quotes. Go back to Matthew 4:4.
In verse 5 in that chapter, it literally says, for Moses writes about righteousness.
Yeah. Moses writes about righteousness. Oh, yeah, there's many more I could choose, but we got to eventually get to chapter 1, verse 1. But first, Matthew chapter 4, verse 4. Three times in Matthew chapter 4, Satan attacks Yeshua. And every time Yeshua responds with a quote from Deuteronomy. So verse 3, Matthew 4, 3. Now when the tempter, that's Satan, came to him, he said, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. But he answered and said, it is written. And then he quotes Deuteronomy. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That's Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3. Then the devil takes him up to the pinnacle and says, throw yourself off. And in verse 7, Yeshua said to him, it is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. That's Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 16. Then the devil takes him up into an exceedingly high mountain and says, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world if you'll just worship me. Verse 10, Yeshua said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, him only you shall serve. That's Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 13. Go to Matthew chapter 22. When they ask him, Rabbi, what is the greatest commandment in the law? Messiah doesn't respond with the Ten Commandments. Not one of the Ten Commandments. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37. Yeshua said, well, the question, verse 36, teacher, rabbi, what's the great commandment in the Torah? Specifically in the Torah. Yeshua said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. The question was, the greatest commandment in the Torah, and he quotes from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. Does that mean that Deuteronomy is part of the Torah? Yes, it means Deuteronomy is Torah. Back to Deuteronomy, chapter 1. Yep. How many times does the New Testament directly quote Deuteronomy? Directly quotes 44 times in the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, and Galatians all quote directly from Deuteronomy. Let me give you a brief outline. Number one, introduction is chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. Number two is a retrospect, a view of Israel's wanderings. Why would Moses want to talk about the wanderings that have been going on for the last 40 years? We'll talk about why. Number three, then from chapter 4 to chapter 26, he reviews the laws that God gave us. And number four, he renews the covenant. The covenant at Mount Sinai gets renewed several times in the Old Testament and then again in the New Testament. It's not a different covenant when it's renewed in chapter 27 to chapter 30. It's the same covenant. But those who are entering into the land weren't there in Exodus 19. They weren't born yet. So as there's a new generation, the covenant is renewed to the new generation. And in the fifth section is the conclusion, which is chapters 31 to 34. Are we ready to start? Then grab hold of your seats. Well, maybe a few more comments first.
I have a question, Brother Wayne.
Go ahead, Rachel.
So you said the introduction is chapters 1 through 5.
Okay.
The retrospect or review of Israel's wanderings is what chapters?
Chapter 1, verse 6 through chapter 4, verse 43.
And then...
The rehearsal of Israel's law is chapter 4, verse 44 through 26:19. Then the renewal of Israel's covenant is chapter 27, verse 1 to chapter 30, verse 20.
Thank you.
Yep. And conclusion is chapter 31, verse 1 to the end. The time period. The time period. It covers 37 days. And then I was going to tell you how you can figure all that out, but just write down 37 days. And the place, it takes place on the east side of the Jordan River, at a place where Moses can look over and see the promised land, even though he will never get to set foot in it in his lifetime. Did he ever get to set his foot in it? Yes, in Matthew chapter 17. But that was not in his lifetime. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1. These are the words, Devarim. That's why in Hebrew it's called Devarim. These are the words which Moses spoke. There's that word spoke. Remember how it's different from said? Spoke is strong emotion. Spoke is your college professor kicking the podium that this is going to be on the test, so write it down. Y'all had professors like that, right? No, you didn't. Neither did I. But Israel does. That's Moses. These are words which Moses spoke to all Israel. What does he mean by all Israel? Why doesn't it just say Israel? Because it includes the mixed multitude, everybody. On this side of the Jordan, that's on the east side. In the wilderness, the word wilderness means desert. In the plain opposite Suf, between Paran, Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizahab. How do we know there's a mixed multitude? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12. At several points, the Bible mentions great numbers of non-Jewish people being grafted in. The mixed multitude isn't even the first. What's the first? What happened to all the wives and children at Shechem? Israel took them. They married the wives. They adopted the children. These weren't descendants of Jacob. They were grafted in. The mixed multitude, Exodus chapter 12, verse 38. A mixed multitude went up with them also, in flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. So when the descendants of Jacob left Egypt, a great mixed multitude went with them. Mixed multitude meaning from many nations of the world. What did Egypt rule over at the time? The world. So that's why at Mount Sinai, God speaks in all the languages of the known world, because there's people there from all kinds of nations. And did the law apply just to Jacob's descendants or to everybody? You said everybody, but how do you know? Because it's right here in the same chapter. Exodus 12, verse 49. In my Bible, it's parallel to verse 38. It's just the next column over. It says, one law shall be for the native born and for the stranger, that is the non-Jew, the mixed multitude, who dwells among you. So is there a ham side of the camp and a lamb side? No. There's just one camp. Which laws apply? All the laws apply to them all. Is this the only time it says that? No. Let's go to Numbers 15. I won't take you to all the places because we wouldn't finish tonight. Numbers chapter 15, it says over and over and over again. Let's start in verse 13. I normally start in 15, let's start in 13. So Numbers chapter 15, beginning in verse 13 says, all who are native born, notice that, all who are native born shall do these things in this manner, in presenting an offering made by fire, sweet aroma to the Lord. And if a stranger dwells with you, that's a non-Jewish person, or whoever is among you throughout your generations, which means forever and ever, and would present an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord, just as you do, so shall he do. One ordinance shall be for you of the assembly, and for the stranger who dwells with you, an ordinance forever, forever, throughout your generations, as you are, so shall the stranger be before the Lord. One law and one custom shall be for you and for the stranger who dwells with you. In the book of Esther, what happened? It says, many of the people converted and became grafted into the Jewish people for fear of the Jews. There are many occasions throughout the Old Testament that whole groups were sucked into the people and became part of the people. And what laws applied? The same laws applied to them all. Go to Numbers chapter 11, since we're in Numbers. Numbers chapter 11. There are people who say the mixed multitude, when they came out of Egypt, they all converted to Judaism and they become Jews and they're no longer the mixed multitude. So again, Numbers chapter 11, verse 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them, they didn't become Jews. They just became part of the children of Israel. Yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? Notice this is four chapters before we read again. One law and one custom. So what happens when we come to the New Testament and a Gentile gets saved by faith and gets grafted into the tree? One law, one custom. Go to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. Who wrote Ephesians? Paul did. Paul said, stop keeping those commandments. No, he did not. Ephesians chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. Verse 11 begins, therefore. Can we really read something that begins with therefore? Do we have to back up and see what it's there for? Look at verse 10. For we, referring to the believers, whether Jew or Gentile, are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yeshua for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That is, we're all supposed to be keeping God's commandments and doing that which he commands us to do. And then he says, remember that you, once Gentiles in the flesh. What does he mean by once? Before you got saved. Gentile means pagan. Once you get saved, you're not pagan anymore. So in verse 12, that at that time, that is, before you got saved, you were without Messiah, being aliens from the Commonwealth of Israel. Before you got saved, you were not part of the Commonwealth of Israel. Worse than that, and you were strangers from the covenants of promise. Not partakers of the covenants. Having no hope without God in the world. But now, in Messiah Yeshua, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Messiah. Who's he talking about? You who were once far off. Talking about the non-believing Gentiles. Have been brought near. Near what? Near the Commonwealth of Israel and the covenants of promise. For himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in his flesh the enmity. Enmity is hatred that separates. That is the law of commandments contained in ordinances. That word ordinances is the Greek word dogma, D-O-G-M-A, dogma, never used of God's commandments. It refers to the rabbinical rules. Specifically, it's referring to Acts chapter 10. Why hadn't the apostles taken the gospel to the Gentile world? Because the rabbis said, you can't. That's the dogma that he had to break down. So as he created himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, that is, whether you were born Jewish or Gentile, makes no difference whatsoever once you get saved by faith. I don't care if you were born a Jew or a Gentile. I had a Baptist pastor ask me not too long ago, how many of the people in your congregation are Jews and how many are not? And I said, I don't know and I don't care. He said, oh, you do too know. I said, no, I really don't know. And I really don't care. He said, you got to know. Why? Because some of them have to follow commandments and some don't. And I said, well, you ought to come study the Bible for a while. He wasn't impressed. But verse 19, now therefore, because once you're saved by faith, you're grafted in. Whether Jew or Gentile makes no difference. Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners. Look back above. What were they strangers from? The covenants of promise. What were they foreigners to? The Commonwealth of Israel. But you're now fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. So now you become part of the Commonwealth of Israel. You become partakers of the covenants. You want to make Baptist preachers mad? Ask them to show you the new covenant for the church. There isn't one. Who's the new covenant with? Go to Hebrews chapter 8 or Jeremiah 31. Take your pick. Let's go to Hebrews 8 just because we're in the New Testament at the moment. Verse 10. For this is the covenant that I make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. That's the new covenant. Who's it with? The house of Israel. So how do the Gentile Christians become part of it? We read Ephesians 2. Become partakers of the Commonwealth and the covenants of promise. There is no separate new covenant for the church. It's the believers getting grafted into Israel. Back to Deuteronomy. We're still in chapter 1, aren't we? Yep. The first thing Moses is going to do in Deuteronomy is a review of history. He is going to review the last 40 years in excruciating detail. Why? Is to show Israel that if they could sin in the midst of constant miracles, they're really going to have to be on their toes when they cross the river into the promised land and they don't have all those miracles all the time. What kind of miracles did they have each and every day? Manna from heaven. Every morning, except for Shabbat, they would go out and gather manna for the 40 years in the wilderness wanderings. And yet, they refused to obey God. When they thirsted, what did he do? He brought water from the rocks. So he says, what are you going to do when you don't have miracles taking place each and every day of your lives if you couldn't be obedient and faithful and holy when God led you? How did they wander through the wilderness? Do you remember? The pillar of fire or pillar of smoke, depending upon day or night, led them from place to place. And then when they stopped and set up camp, that pillar of cloud in the day and pillar of fire at night was in the center of their camp. And they rebelled against God over and over again. When they came into the eastern side of the Jordan River through the lands of Sihon and Og, who were giants, God defeated them and gave the children of Israel all their lands, all their property, all their riches, all their wealth. And they still rebelled against God. So Moses starts with a, let's remember the past and not repeat it. What's an old adage? Those who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it. Verse 2. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. So? Well, they spent 38 years. Yeah. They went to Mount Sinai and stayed there for 2 years, building the tabernacle and all that. Then they've journeyed for 38 years on what should have been an 11 days journey. Why? Moses is going to tell them why. So verse 3. Now it came to pass in the 40th year, that's the 40th year as they came out of Egypt, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him as commandments to them. Verse 3 means he's going to go over each and every commandment that God gave for all the people. Does that make you think of anything in the New Testament? Go to Matthew chapter 28. Remember, these people that are now grown-ups had not even been born when God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. So Moses is speaking to people that did not hear with their own ears. Does that mean they have an excuse? No. He's going to hammer it to them. But again, Matthew 28, verses 18 to 20. We've read these verses before. I'm sure we'll read them again. It says, and Yeshua came and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe what? And that word observe is actually do. It's not just think about. It's do. Put into practice all things that I have commanded you, along with you always, even to the end of the age. So the disciples are to go to the Gentile nations and teach them all of God's commandments because they haven't heard them before. And does God say, go teach them some of the things? How about the Ten Commandments? Oh, but omit one. Just teach them nine. That's close enough. No. It says all things. So let's go back to Deuteronomy, chapter 1, verse 3. According to all that the Lord had given him as commandments to them. Verse 4. After he had killed Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who dwelt at Ashtaroth in Edrei. Why does he mention Sihon and Og?
Giants.
They were giants. They were kings that commanded the very land that they're now standing in. Let's go read about it. Go to Numbers chapter 21. Numbers chapter 21. Israel had sent 12 spies up into the land of Canaan and came back and said, we can't do it, we can't do it, we can't conquer them, they're giants. And now God has led them into the land of Sihon and Og, who are giants. And let's read and see what happens to Sihon and Og. Numbers 21, verses 21 to 35. Then Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into fields or vineyards. We will not drink water from wells. We will go by the king's highway until we have passed through your territory." Meaning what? Won't cost you a thing. We won't bother anything. We won't take anything. We won't steal anything. We simply want to walk on your road. But Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. So Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel in the wilderness. And he came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. Who had told Israel to go through this land? God had. God had said, go. Sihon says, no, you're not going. Then Israel defeated him with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok. Those are two rivers. As far as the people of Ammon, for the border of the people of Ammon was fortified. So Israel took all these cities, and Israel dwelt in all the cities of the Amorites, in Heshbon and in all its villages. Where is that? Think on the east side of the Jordan River, about halfway to the from the north to south of the Dead Sea, all the way up to the Jabbok River. It's land that was given later to the tribe of Reuben. Remember, 2.5 tribes settled on the east side of the Jordan River. Reuben is given possession of this land that was Sihon's. All Sihon had to do was say, okay, walk through my land, take nothing, just walk through. And he said, no. He defied God, and God destroyed the entire people and gave the tribe of Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob, that land. Verse 26, still in Numbers 21. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and had taken all this land from his hand as far as the Arnon. Again, that's the river. Therefore, those who speak in Proverbs say, come to Heshbon, let it be built. Let the city of Sihon be repaired. For a fire went out from Heshbon, fire's God's judgment. A flame from the city of Sihon. It consumed Ar of Moab. Remember that word. The lords of the heights of the Arnon. Woe to you, Moab. You have perished, O people of Chemosh. Chemosh was the god of the peoples. They said, that's our god. We don't know your god. We ain't listening to your god. You're not traveling through our land. And God showed him who was God. He has given his sons as fugitives and his daughters into captivity to Sihon, king of the Amorites. We have shot at them. Heshbon has perished as far as Dibon. Then we lay waste as far as Nophah, which reaches to Medeba. Thus Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites. Then Moses went sent to spy out Jezer and took his villages and drove out the Amorites who were there. Now verse 33 turns from Sihon to Og. And they turned and went up by the way to Bashan. Bashan are those nice green mountains to the north of the Sea of Galilee. Great grazing land. That's where they talk about the fat cows of Bashan because it's such good grazing land. That's where Gamla is. If we had more time, I'd tell you all about Gamla. Just it goes all the way up to Mount Hermon. It's the land that was settled by Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. So verse 33, they turned and went up by the way to Bashan. So Og, king of Bashan, went out against them, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. Then the Lord said to Moses, do not fear him, for I have delivered him into your hand with all his people and his land. And you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwell at Heshbon. So he defeated him, his sons, and all his people, until there was no survivor left him. They took possession of his land. So Sihon and Og were giants, we're going to learn that later, who absolutely would not yield to the word of the Lord, even so much as allow the people to pass through. So both their lands were taken from and given to 2.5 tribes of Israel to be a permanent possession. But that's going to have to wait until next time, for we've hit the 8 o'clock hour. We'll pick up next time, Lord willing, in chapter 1, verse 5.